With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, 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 and welcome to The New Normal, the show where we talk about life and feminism in quarantine. So today, our guest is the fabulous Rubes Walsh, almost Dr. Rubes Walsh. Rubes has been on the show a few times, on The Guilty Feminist a few times. She is a popular guest. And today, she is going to talk to us about her time in quarantine, but also, excitingly, about skin hunger. I'm just looking for my... This is genuinely how TV is made now. I've said it before, but Graham Norton's exactly the same. It's just him in a chair looking at the floor. So let me see if Rubes is there. And connecting. Hey!
Hello!
It's Rubes J. Walsh, almost Dr. Rubes J. Walsh. How are you?
I'm okay, thanks. Yeah, going slowly mad and locked inside my own home. How are you?
I'm very well. And you live and work in Amsterdam, don't you?
I do, yeah.
I mean, I know that. I say as if I don't know, but I'm saying it for the audience. I obviously know very well that you do, but I'm just trying to be professional. I believe you live and work in Amsterdam.
I do live and work in Amsterdam, yes.
And can you tell our wonderful New Normal viewers a little bit about what it is that you do and what you've talked about on the podcast before?
Sure. So
I mean, you don't have to recap everything you've said on the podcast before, but just give yourself context.
Just for context, sure.
Because you're interesting.
Context, who the hell is Rubes? Rubes, as you say, I'm nearly at the end of my PhD now in developmental neuropsychology at the Vrije Universiteit in Amsterdam, looking at social cognitive development in adolescence and how that relates to mental health outcomes.
Wonderful. So
that's basically it.
Now, the first question on The New Normal is, how the hell are you?
You know.
In lockdown alone.
Sorry?
In lockdown alone.
Yeah, I'm fine, except that I'm extremely alone and very irrational.
I mean, join the club.
This is
the extremely irrational club. I'm not alone. I have Tom and three cats. There are no other people in my world or my life. And I know that's not the same as being completely alone, of course. It's weird. We're all having the same experience completely differently.
Yeah. I think people are going to come out of this in 2025, people are going to like meet in a bar and go, were you locked down alone during coronavirus? Because you have all the same weird coping mechanisms that I do left over from that. Do you know what I mean?
Interesting.
I really think it's going to have a developmental effect, basically, on all of us.
Interesting. Oh, someone's already suggested your T-shirt, extremely alone and extremely irrational. So, Rubes, you will know because you've watched the show, but if anyone's tuned in for the first time today, the merch store do an on-demand T-shirt based on something the guest has said. This is a slogan, so it would say, extremely alone, extremely irrational, ex Rubes J. Walsh, the new normal, stay at home. And you'll be able to buy that T-shirt and all of the money will go directly to Rubes. The merch store doesn't take a cut and neither do we. So I can't imagine you're going to say anything better than that for that T-shirt. And we could end the interview there, really. But let's
all
not.
All right, then.
don't go. What are your coping strategies for being alone in quarantine?
I don't challenge myself. I just do exactly what I can manage and not a drop more.
Excellent. That's a good strategy. It's a really good strategy.
Yeah, I think at one stage I was really throwing myself into work and that was okay for a while. And then at some point that just became quite, maladaptive really, because I was getting very stressed out about things that no longer matter because we never leave our house. And like, who's going to tell me off about a deadline if, so because nobody else is meeting their deadlines either, so they're not really deadlines anymore, they're just sort of
lines
exactly. So
arbitrary lines.
I tried to stop doing that, but I'm right. Still a little bit of a workaholic in my very weird way, but I'm coping.
Has anything about this experience surprised you, either your response or the human race's response or the Amsterdam
response?
I'm surprised
how socially anxious I can be without ever seeing anyone. I get very socially anxious on, I've talked to you about this before, but I get very socially anxious on video chats. I never, I always did. But like that being my main way of interacting with people has done something to me. And I no longer have this sort of specific thing of like, oh, it's a video chat, therefore I'm anxious. All of my sort of more usual social anxiety stuff of like, did I say the wrong thing? That seems to just be really kind of weirdly heightened and just different somehow.
Makes sense. I had that in early on in week one. I crashed a house party and then two of the people immediately left. And I was like, it's me. It's things I've said. And I started going over everything I'd said. And I contacted the person I knew best who had stayed on and talked to me and said, did I completely crash that? And she said, no. They were going to go anyway. But I was like, were they? How do you know? Someone's saying, love your glasses, Deborah. Tralise Cooper, who is a New Zealand designer, who's actually just offered to give me some new glasses because I broke one of their pairs. Thank you. Shout out to Tralise Cooper. Check them out online.
I've been plugging them enough.
They've got a sale on at the moment. They've got a sale on their reading glasses. Can I ask you, and this is, I'm very interested in your response to this because this is quite a new question that I've only asked a few people on The New Normal, but it's about how we think it might change intimacy, how it might change our attitude towards sex. So I was having a call and we were talking about theatre, when theatres would open again. And I said one of my predictions for a post-COVID, post-vaccine world.
Yeah.
Not just a post-lockdown, but a post-vaccine world. One of my predictions is we will dress up to go to the theatre again. There'll be none of this scruffy jeans and, you know, it just come in how you are. People will make a night of it and people will take joy. I don't mean they have to dress expensively, but I mean they will put thought into what they wear and how they look. And like there'll be a joy in dressing up. And my other prediction on this work call was that there would be lots of orgies. And everyone went, good second prediction. And I was like, you know, we were kind of joking about it, but I said, but I don't think they'll be like we imagine orgies to be now, or if we've experienced them. I think it'll be much more, there'll be a corner for just touching hands, and there'll be a corner for olfactory senses, perfume corner. And in fact, I pitched this so hard that in the end we were like, let's make this event happen. So there's a corner where you just, you can touch hands. It's like a consent warehouse where you go and you can touch hands. Then it's just, there's another one for eye contact. There's another one for, there's lots of perfumes and you can let each other smell things. There's a sort of, there's a one where you just look, there's all these amazing aerial burlesque dancers. And so as you go through, different parts of your senses are being triggered. There's a kissing corner, which again is a consent kissing corner. And so we're much more in this. I mean, this is just something I invented on a Zoom call, to be honest. Let's not get carried away.
Yeah, but, I mean, to be honest, the orgies that I'm impatiently waiting for at the end of this are a little bit less tame than that.
But... I'm not saying there's not going to be a full sex corner.
Okay, good.
I am saying that...
That's where you'll find me.
I think this will slow us down, and I think we'll want to kind of just look in someone's eyes again for a while and then touch their hand. And so... You were telling me about something called skin hunger.
Yeah.
Could you please tell us more about what that is?
Sure. Well, the preface is it's not really something I've studied that directly myself. I first encountered the idea because when we were setting up our neuroimaging studies here, we were obviously it was about social interactions. So we were sort of simulating social interactions in the scanner. And there's quite a bit of work showing that threat sensitivity is a lot higher if you're on your own, and depending on who you're with, but especially if you're with somebody who you're close to, and especially if they're touching you. Touching was the biggest difference, bigger than who it was. Being physically touched by somebody reduced your reduced the anxiety-related activation when you were anticipating an electric shock, for example. This was not our study, this was another study. I don't shock people.
So if someone holds your hand before you get an injection, it reduces the anxiety of getting the injection because you're holding someone's hand.
But not just children. I mean, this is the thing, right? This is the point about skin hunger is that, you know, for children, it's very normal to be like, you know, it hurt and now I need mummy to touch my skin and make me feel better.
Kiss it better.
Yeah, exactly. And there was some very unethical experiments done with monkeys where they replaced the mother with a sort of basically a wire frame or like a...
Oh my God.
The wire frame was the one with the food. The infant monkeys didn't eat because they would only go to the one that was, you know, tactile, felt like a real mother monkey.
I can't even bear that. That's the worst thing I've ever heard of.
It's a horrible experiment.
Why do we do that to monkeys? We should do it with consensual people.
I don't think they'd get away with it now, thankfully.
No, but so much was done in the 60s and 70s, which is before ethics had troubled the psychological community very much.
I mean, speaking of ethics in psychological research, just today, a paper in eNeuro has been retracted that I've been stomping my feet about for months. It came out in, November last year? And the whole purpose of the paper was just to say that trans people could be fixed and that we shouldn't be allowed to exist as trans, that we should be sort of chemically forced to be cisgender.
Oh, God, I'm sorry.
And, yeah, thanks. but it's been retracted, which doesn't happen that often. Usually if something's been retracted, it's because there was... you know, somebody lied about their data, literally lied. But this paper didn't have any original data in it. He just kind of, basically he looked at hamsters and then at the fact that hormones make trans people less depressed about, the shape of our bodies. And then went, oh, well, it must be because estrogen is a neuromodulator. So therefore, which it isn't. It sort of can work like one, but it's not exactly the same thing. It's a hormone. You know, it was very, very exciting to hear that it's been retracted. I'm a little bit worried about the blowback now, but I'm excited that, like, we've been heard. Because there's a big team of really far, far more qualified people than me kind of going, well, this isn't how that brain area functions at all. Because it was just bad science.
I'm glad it's been retracted.
Yeah, I mean, I think... there's an interesting debate about retraction as well, that there's, in some ways, there might be value to sort of going, this paper is bullshit, but not actually retracting it per se. Anyway, that's a whole other debate, but I only mention it because when you said about like research ethics, there are so many dimensions of research ethics that just get completely ignored still.
And we will, I am sure, come back to the trans issue on when we get to your question about feminist actions. Are there any experiments with humans about skin hunger that demonstrate we need the touch of skin?
Yeah, so there's a paper by, hang on, let me just, I wrote the name down, especially for you, Deborah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Holt Lundstad is the name of the person.
Holt Lundstad, yeah.
I think it's a woman, and she did two meta-analyses where you take the data from lots of other people's papers and put them together. And she worked out that going without intimate touch, which isn't sex necessarily, although sex does qualify, but
would be intimate touch
and holding hands and all of that stuff.
So not touch like someone putting their hand on your arm and saying, have you got the time, and not touch like someone guiding you, a doctor saying, you know, can I touch
your stethoscope? Those things might count a bit, but the study was
the intention of the touch is important. Touch. Yeah,
exactly. And the sort of broad brushstrokes of the finding was basically it's about as bad for you as smoking or being severely obese to go without intimate touch for more than a couple of days. So people who
More than a couple of days.
Yeah. So it's people who are smoking. Really socially isolated, it has really profound effects on their physical health as well as their mental health. And the part of the reason that I was thinking about it and it mentioned it in our conversation the other day was that, you know, there's this idea of allostatic load. So allostasis refers to the things that your body does to survive that it doesn't do the rest of the time. So the most frequently sort of cited example would be flight or fight, right? That is an example of allostasis. Like your body does something that's fundamentally quite unhealthy, but enables you to get through a dangerous situation and
come
out alive and able to reproduce. Because obviously that's what biology is kind of trying to achieve, is reproduction.
Selfish gene, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, no, I'm not going to start that one.
but that idea in common parlance.
But that general idea, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we need to keep, we need to keep pumping out more of our likeness. We don't really, but our biological imperative is that, yeah.
Exactly. So that's something that the body does, but there are, I mean, I don't know if there's millions, but there's thousands and thousands of ways in which that can be, that can take place. And one really important dimension of that is the social dimension. And it's obviously very understudied because of course it is, because the people who it most affects are marginalized people. So for example, there's a protein found in blood called C-reactive protein that's involved in inflammatory responses. And it's found in much higher levels in... yeah, Chloe is right. It's not my area of study. I don't know all the answers to all the questions.
But people are asking, what about people who don't like to be touched and feel uncomfortable? Or what about people who don't like physical touch? But presumably those people are outliers and...
Yeah,
they might still be experiencing some an emotional desire not to be touched, but also their skin might be responding in some ways. There's always outliers.
Possibly, and I suspect for a lot of those people the processes that are triggered by skin hunger are happening anyway. But you know, I'm now guessing. But
yeah. And there are always outliers as well. There may be people to whom this doesn't apply. Like you know, there are people who smoke 100 fags a day and live till 104 and you know, like, so it's not also I see some people saying, oh my god, I'm dead, I'm toast, but it's not as simple as to say if you're alone in quarantine you're dead on Monday. Just to be clear, it's a study looking at long-term effects and just being raising an awareness of the impact, because we know about smoking but we don't talk about the impact of someone not being touched, like elderly people who live alone not being given a hug, or you know, disabled people who might be living alone who might not be able to get out as much,
it's part of the wider system of your sensitivity to your social environment. So for some people the amount of affiliative need, so like the amount of like feeling close to other people that they need in order to feel okay, is lower. C-reactive protein. I was talking about allostatic load.
This is Rachel Craftman, who books The Guilty Feminist, is asking, hello, Rachel Craftman. She's asking, what's the relation to CRP, inflammation, and skin touch? Rubes, can you please explain this question, this intelligent question from the clever Rachel Craftman, and then give us the answer?
Okay. So
John Paul's saying, I've always thought of myself as an outlier. John Paul runs the Guilty Feminist Patreon. She said, I mean, we're all outliers in different ways. We're all outliers from different things. We're all outliers in different situations. Can you answer Rachel's question?
I can try. So the key finding with C-reactive protein is that it's higher in more marginalised people, basically.
What is that protein?
It's an inflammatory marker. So it builds up as a result of patterns of inflammatory responses over time. So like when something, this is tricky, but like when something, when there's a threat, right, your mm-hmm. body gets ready to deal with it. And different right. threats it deals with in different ways.
So if a tiger came in here now, my amygdala would be activated. I would be getting ready to run. There'd be all sorts of things that would happen in my body that aren't happening normally.
Yeah.
That might not be great for my body, but it's better than being eaten by a tiger.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And you know, there are, it's also better for your survival and also for your reproductive success to be able to form and maintain good relationships with the other people in your tribe, so to mm-hmm. speak, right? And so that is a social threat, is a kind of a distinct kind of threat, and it's very I think it's a really important dimension of this, because we know, right, that there's a huge health disparity between the most socially accepted groups and the least mm-hmm. socially accepted groups. And
that's physical health as well as mental health.
In physical health as well as mental health. And those effects aren't straightforwardly explainable. Estrogen, in theory, should protect your heart, but trans women have higher rates of cardiovascular disease than cis men. And I think it's because of allostatic load. Because every time you go outside, you're faced with a novel threat of each person who might potentially be a threat, and then the ones that are.
So you have to look for tigers everywhere.
Because
you're always on the alert for a tiger on the tube, because someone might...
The more people who hate you, the more tigers there are.
The more violence you have to be alert for.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you're on the tube and you're thinking, am I going to get... some kind of transphobic violence, in either verbal or physical or just a microaggression. So you're there going, just on the alert. Because I think that I've said that for years, in terms of a gender divide, that I've talked to the cis men in my life who say they're not just on low level alert all the time for being attacked, like especially at night. I'm just on alert. I'm on alert, and nowhere near how alert I'd have to be if I were a trans woman, but more alert than my cis male friends say that they are. So that's really interesting. So what you're saying is the more marginalized you are in society, the more on alert you have to be for tigers, the more of your adrenaline you're using up, and therefore the more you are, the more you are susceptible to illness and other diseases.
Right, so you have this higher allostatic load, and the reason I'm talking now about allostatic load and C-reactive protein, which is a really quite a common marker that's used to measure it, is because social exclusion is an allostasis trigger, and touch is something that really ameliorates that effect dramatically.
It's demonstrative. It's like, you are in this tribe because I'm touching you, even if it's our little tribe of two.
Exactly.
Which gives
people who are a bit anxious hearing this some reassurance, because the thing is that we are also, in other ways, closer to each other. Yes, it's related to oxidative stress. Oxidative stress can be caused by certain types of allostatic load pathways. Mm-hmm.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Someone's asking about the link to depression. Is that separate and also likely to be exacerbated, or do you think those things are connected?
They're connected, yeah, but like both ways. So the more depressed you are, you're cognitively behaving differently, you're treating the world as more threatening.
This is an interesting point. Someone says, this is fascinating. Similar to fat phobia and the impact on health, that is often put down to weight itself rather than the stresses of navigating the world in a fat body.
Yeah, but
so when you said before about being obese or extremely obese,
yeah.
Do you think that's a factor there, that that there may be some there may be some of the health risks with being in a fat body may not all be down to the most obvious ones that the doctors would that most doctors would correlate, that may be also about exactly what you're talking about, being othered in society?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, definitely. I mean, again, this is very much my opinion and not an area of expertise really of mine, but that I really see that link, you know, and certainly, you know, when I came across this Holt-Lundstad paper, that with the specific comparison to both smoking and obesity,
mm-hmm.
I just thought, of course, you know, of course fat people get ostracized and have to look at the world as if it's full of threats, because when you're fat, it is, mm-hmm. because we have a really fatphobic society.
Mm-hmm. So you get on public transport and you're just alert for any transphobic tigers, which could do anything from make you feel detribed and uncomfortable to actually severe violence. Someone could kill you.
Yeah.
And cis women experience that in a way that is less likely to provoke quite so much adrenaline, but also because we have to, you know, be concerned about sexual assault and gendered violence, all of those things. And then, if you're so it's about how many tigers are in your purview. And so if you are in a fat body and you get on an aeroplane, you think, oh God, where are the tigers going to be? Is somebody going to sit down next to me and huff and puff? Is someone going to ask to move? Is the flight attendant going to make a remark? Are people going to stare? So that's a really interesting, it's sort of like where society does not accommodate or in some way dehumanizes you. So if you're a fat person at a party for fat people in a very fat positive space, then you will not be seeing those tigers. You will not be frightened. You will not be, your adrenaline will not be going up. And same as queer people in queer spaces. Rachel's saying, could it be a contributing factor to why 80% of autoimmune diseases are recorded in women?
I don't know, but I suspect not. I think the conversations around autoimmunity is a little bit, I mean, this is, you want to talk about getting outside my academic comfort? But okay, here we go. My mum has an autoimmune disease, so I will take a stab at it from the sort of family member point of view. As well. So I think,
look, you're the most qualified on this Instagram live. The more of the two of us,
okay.
You're more qualified. So,
I'll take that.
In on that base.
Okay.
The British public are tired of experts anyway, Rubes.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
So I mean, if you've got a vague expert.
I'm not an expert, so you should listen to me because I'm not an expert. But Yeah, autoimmune diseases are much more common in certainly cis women. I don't know whether the difference has been studied in trans people. I would guess it goes along broadly along assigned sex lines. But the thing about that is basically if the reason that was happening was allostatic load, then our explanation for why women generally live longer than men would go away, which is that women's immune systems seem on average to be stronger. And that's thought to be to do with pregnancy and childbirth.
Oh yeah, somebody else says, I read some literature about this immune response in women is usually stronger than men, and it has been hypothesized that that can turn against the body and result in autoimmune disease. So that's interesting. It's sort of like when you have a strength that it's a bit like when you're when you have to take immunosuppressants because something becomes overly active.
Yeah.
Now people are asking about pets. There's someone here who's saying that he's a trans man, and thanks you for talking about this. That's nice. Thank you, Jonas. Is it Jonas? Jonas is Martin. People talking about, are there other ways of, if they are isolated alone, are pets helpful to stroke? Does that give you the same intimacy as skin on skin?
Drawing purely on personal experience, yes, I think so. I don't know whether it would go as far. I doubt it would go as far, but you know, if we're thinking about, you know, what can people do to minimize this problem for themselves in their, you know, during isolation, I would say pets are fantastic. If you haven't got pets, a cuddly toy. You know, the monkeys were all right with it. Well, they weren't all right at all, but like the cuddly
toy, they preferred that. Yeah,
they actively preferred it, so it's obviously doing something. Or well.
Yeah, it's facsimiling something in a, yeah, obviously, yeah. Much less good way.
And like also, so this is very much a personal thing, but I have a cuddly unicorn that I bought Ray for Christmas a few years ago, and Ray left.
Raise your partner.
Yeah, raise my partner. Yeah, sorry. And Ray left it here just before the last time they were here before lockdown started. And I cuddle that quite a lot, and I find that can feel like, I don't know, if you can anthropomorphize a cuddly toy, I think it's a good idea. But I also think, like, you know, the little group of four queer women that you set up with us two and Katia and Ellen, it just feeling like you're in touch with people, it really, that really does help. I think this is, you know, the same paper that I talked about earlier, you know, they, one of the things that they looked at was the amount and the positivity of the social contacts that you have. And I think if you do have social contacts during this time where you're interacting with people who, I mean, geography isn't an issue anymore, right? This is the silver lining of all this, is that, you know, before, if I wanted to do a guilty feminist event, I needed to like schedule it way in advance so that I could like get on a plane to come to London. And if I wanted to see some of my close friends who are in London, I would have to be in London. And now seeing people doesn't make any difference about like how close or how far apart we are.
True, because you could live in this street and I couldn't see you.
Exactly.
So we're learning
to
make our contacts. So cuddly toys, pets if you have them, cuddly toys if you don't.
Yeah.
I think a small WhatsApp group is a really good idea. I put you three together because I thought you had a lot in common and you were all queer women isolated alone. And I thought that you just should be in that small WhatsApp group. And that's proved very successful because even though you don't know each other, you're kind of getting to know each other and you're sharing lots. And it's a sort of safe space to go, look, I made a cake, or, oh, I just sat an exam, or, oh, I've just been for a run, or, you know, and to, you know,
things, but yeah.
The idea is there.
Yeah.
There's. I feel like some of those things have happened.
You
know, and so there's that. just a connection. But as soon as those WhatsApp groups get big, so I'm on some of those like 55 people. I don't kind of want to. You know, you can't put out something super intimate. You can't say, actually, I'm feeling really low today. To 55 people, some of the numbers you don't recognize. It doesn't feel the same. Then it gets so big, it's an audience as opposed to a smaller intimate group. So it might be good to have a little WhatsApp group just with like two friends or three friends, where there's probably four is a good number because there's always somebody around to go thumbs up, well done.
Yeah.
But when it gets into 10, you can feel excluded, like, oh, no one's responding to my posts. So I think, because you can't respond to everything all of the time, it's all you would do. So I think that could be a really useful thing. What are people saying here? Physical distancing. Glad people are very thrilled you've given them a justification to cuddle their toys.
I mean, there's other kinds of touch and other kinds of toys for that, but you guys know about that, I assume.
Yes. What do you think it's going to do to all the kind of sex and intimacy stuff? Do you think my prediction that there will be more like roaring 20 sex parties is going to happen? Are people going to be concerned? Because I think there's going to be different post lockdown is going to be different from post vaccine. There's going to be two distinct phases, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. But I think do you remember on the podcast before I mentioned that in order to have sex, your brain kind of has to suppress your disgust response?
That's right, you did. Yeah.
So
it was, I'm glad it was on the podcast and not in bed. It's not a sexy opening line. Just a second. I just need to tone down my disgust response before I have sex with you. That's not a good t-shirt. Don't.
I've only ever said that to a cis straight man.
Fair. Fair.
I haven't.
I'm sure
I
you
thought
haven't.
It, but I've never said it.
And you are of course not saying we feel disgusted when we're in bed with someone.
That's the point.
It's just that if in any other situation, mm-hmm. like bodily fluids and, you know, genitalia and things like that, you might go, ooh. And it's the response that I have if someone sends me a dick pic. It's like, what is that?
Out of context.
But an erect penis in the right context can be hot, but in your WhatsApp in the middle of the day, and I don't feel like that about anything else. If someone just randomly sent me a picture of a chocolate mousse, I'd be like, feel like some mousse.
Yeah.
But if someone sends me a picture of a penis, I'm not like, feel like some penis.
But okay, but is this is I'm just spitballing here, but like
so to speak
but the
I mean,
but like, not, here's not the a thing, good choice. Right?
Yep.
If you see like a nice, I don't know, like whatever it is about a person that you find attractive that isn't their genitals, then
nice
you might
ass,
start thinking,
nice chest.
Now I fancy sex. And then once that's happened, other things might be less disgusting.
Yes. So that's what you're saying. You have to suppress, your body suppresses the natural gag. The reflex that you would have normally. So then join this up. You said this on the podcast before, join this up to what we were saying about sex after
quarantine. So
sex post-quarantine.
Something that we've been seeing and that I will probably rant about at some point is an already known thing, which is that after every pandemic or epidemic, whenever health anxiety goes up, disgust sensitivity in the general population goes up.
Oh, because it has to, because that's how we keep ourselves safe.
Yeah, exactly. And it then also, because disgust sensitivity is implicated in moral reasoning, so we use the same basic mechanisms to that's why it's something is disgusting, morally disgusting, taste is disgusting, sensation is disgusting. It's one dimension of affect, really.
Okay.
Because of that,
yeah.
Socially conservative political viewpoints,
yes,
gain traction after pandemics or after epidemics or periods of concerns.
Because people can be because their disgust triggers are up, they can be more disgusted by queerness because it's part of the wider sexual conversation, but one that they personally, if they're straight and cis, or if they're living a straight and cis because they haven't dared go there, yeah, they might go, oh, it's easier to find an image outside your own sexual desires, whatever those might be, disgusting in a post-pandemic or in a pandemic or post-pandemic world. So yeah, we need to be on alert for queer phobia.
Yeah, I think we need to be on alert for the rise of fascism, essentially. I think it's already been happening before COVID came, and I think COVID is going to make it a lot worse. And the thing that potentially not going to, but could do, and so the thing that I've been thinking about is that it can kind of go one of two ways, right? One is we will all look at Donald Trump and America and go, oh, right, capitalism is a death cult, and swing to the left.
Mm-hmm.
Or we will all
pull the ladder up, Jack. Borders up. We don't want any of your foreign germs in here. That's exactly what started it in the first place.
People right, moving around is a problem. People, you know, all these touchy-feely feelings are bad because then you then you might touch someone and then you're going to spread the virus. I mean, it's not that logical, but that is kind of a simplification of that kind of process. And I think, so I think that there will be sex parties, but you're going to have difficulty finding a venue. It's basically what I think. There's going to be...
Wow, what an insight. Bruce, I feel like this should be a two-parter. Everyone's saying this is the best episode yet, and we're getting so much insight from you. And I don't want this to be so long we get cut off, and I'd rather do two parts. I think it could be a Rubes part one, Rubes part two. Audience, if we came back on Monday, if Rubes was free, for part two of The New Normal, would you be up for that? Would you be interested in a part two? Jonk was saying yes. Because I think it would be good, because I think this episode will get a lot of plays on YouTube, and I'd like to have two really watchable, compact episodes as a part A and a part B. I'm trying to keep this to half an hour, and some I did yesterday because I think they're more watchable. So yeah, people are liking this idea. There's lots of thumbs up. So I'm going to end now by asking you, what will you do when you get out of here? If they said quarantine's over now, we found about, what's the first thing you're going to do? Quarantine's over right now. What's the thing you're desperate to do?
Hug my partner.
Oh.
Yeah. And get married. I mean, this is the other thing. Before this happened, we were literally planning a wedding because we're meant to be moving to Canada later this year for me to start a postdoc looking at allostatic load in trans women. Which is why I've had to read up on it lately. And the whole just being on my own. Like, even before, like, lockdown and stuff, I just found it really hard being away from Ray for extended periods of time. And it was something that we decided because, we decided to when we were sort of making decisions a few years ago, we decided that, you know, we both kind of wanted an academic career. And we both, you know, and we know that that involves moving around a lot. And we thought, well, we'll just do it and we'll see how it goes. Mm-hmm. And our relationship has been great. Like, I mean, I'm extremely lucky in the person I... Oh,
Reverend Kate said, I'll marry you, darling. I've promised I would.
But you still can't do it not in person.
So, no, not right now, this second.
So that needs to happen. But yeah, so that was... So that's probably number one. And then number two would be my granddad, who's quite ill. And if he gets coronavirus, he will die. But if he doesn't get it, he might be okay.
You want to see your special people.
I want to see my special people, yeah. Mm. Yeah, and you know the thing, like I've joked a lot about like craving sex and stuff, but it just, I don't know. Like, I had a very active sex life before this, and mm-hmm. I'm starting to think I don't need it as much as I thought I did. Mm-hmm. What I need is like people, not bodies.
Connection and hugs, and yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
That's been a very atypically intelligent and sensitive answer from you.
Oh.
Rube J. Walsh, I'm sure we've got our t-shirt slogan already, but if you are you definitely free on Monday?
I should probably just double check, but I think I'm but pretty no, sure I am, because this week was a one-off, so I'm normally free on a Monday. No, actually, I'm not normally free on a Monday, but this
coming... We could do a second part tomorrow. I had asked Steve, but I haven't heard back. So you could do it Friday if you want. I could move Steve to Monday.
That would be easier.
Okay. So tomorrow is part two. So cool. Tomorrow at 6 p.m., come back and hear more fascinating scientific insights with a heavy helping of compassion and liberal values from Rubes J. Walsh. We really look forward to that. And we'll hear about your feminist ask tomorrow.
Sure.
Rubes, it has been genuinely wonderful. We will see you back here tomorrow at 6 o'clock. And if everyone who's watching this live, if you could tell people to watch it over the next 24 hours on the it'll be in the stories, and then after that on YouTube, because I'm sure a lot more people will be interested in this. So if you could direct them to it, share it on your stories, tell people about it, tell people that you found it interesting, that would be great for us. In the meantime, thank you so much, Rubes, for coming on.
Pleasure.
Say goodbye to Rubes J. Walsh, everybody.
Bye.
And check out our t-shirts at guiltyfeminist.com. Check out our Patreon. If you would like to support us, we would love you to, and we'd love you to be part of our community.
Oh, speaking of t-shirts,
yeah.
Capitalism is a death cult.
Oh, well, that could be. I mean, you might get two t-shirts if you do 2 days.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll save that one for tomorrow.
Lots of love. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
See you at 6 o'clock tomorrow. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.